If you have your Bibles, please open to Nehemiah chapter 9. Nehemiah chapter 9. We're going to be looking at here what some of the Levites are encouraging the people to remember, encouraging them in such a way that they will make their lives right, encouraging them in such a way that they will remember what God has done for them and want to live holy. It begins actually in the beginning of the chapter, but we're going to begin in verse 5. And we're going to skip around a little bit because after we begin and we read that initial part, I want to skip around because I want to show you how many times it says that God did something for them. And we're going to kind of get a very quick recap of the Old Testament up to this point. Verse 5. Then the Levites, Jeshua, Kadmiel, Bani, Hashbani, Sherebi, Hodiah, Shebaniah, and Pethahiah said, "Stand up and bless the Lord your God from everlasting to everlasting. Blessed be your glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise." Now pay attention to the next section we're going to be reading. "You are the Lord, you alone. You have made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth and all that is on it, the seas and all that is in them. And you preserve all of them, and the host of heaven worships you. You are the Lord, the God who chose Abram, and brought him up out of Ur of the Chaldeans, and gave him the name Abraham. You found his heart faithful before you, and made with him the covenant to give his offspring the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Perizzite, the Jebusite, the Girgashite, and you have kept your promise, for you are righteous." In that section of Scripture, a bunch of times it says, "You did something." And he's reminding again the people what God has done. "You have done this, you have done this." And I want you to kind of skip around with me, but be patient. Beginning in verse 9, he says, "You saw." So God saw something. Looking down further in the next verse, in chapter 10, it says, "You knew." And then in verse 11, it says, "You divided." And then he says, "You cast." Verse 12, he says, "You led." Verse 13, "You came." In verse 14, "You made." In verse 15, "You gave." Later in verse 15, "You told." If you read the rest of this chapter, you will see so many phrases that are similar to that. God did something. And he's reminding them that God did this for us. And look down, we're going to skip down to the beginning in verse 20. "You gave your good spirit to instruct them, and did not withhold your manna from their mouth, and gave them water for their thirst. 40 years, again, you sustained them in the wilderness, and they lacked nothing." Now the next line is where we're going to take our lesson from. "Their clothes did not wear out, and their feet did not swell." Their clothes did not wear out, and their feet did not swell. How many of you guys ever stopped and pondered that passage? How many of you guys read the Bible meditator? Come on, I better see a lot more hands than that. Every hand was up, Don. There wasn't a hand lacking. In the Bible Meditator, a couple of months ago, I wrote an article based off of what we're going to be discussing tonight. So that's why I was curious how many of you were on the same page I was on. But this passage here, he says, your clothes did not wear out, and your feet did not swell. How many of us ever stopped and thought about what that actually means? Your feet did not swell. That's what I want to talk about tonight. That's the title of my lesson. Your feet did not swell. Don Michael the other day, and I hope he doesn't mind me pointing this out, said, "Oh, my feet are so swollen," and he showed me his ankles. My dad frequently will tell me how swollen his feet are. A lot of people get swollen feet. I'm not even going to ask how many of you get swollen feet, because it's a common thing, right? But we're not talking about that type of swollen feet here. We're talking about swollen feet that would have been on people who were walking in the desert for long periods of time, on nomads. How hard, how difficult would it be if your feet were always swollen and you were having to walk on it? But this passage tells us, and it actually is in the same passage in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 4, the same reading occurs. It says there, their feet did not swell. Why did God think it necessary to put this in the Bible? Their feet did not swell. There are some scholars who think it means one thing, some who think it means another thing. Tonight I'm going to introduce something that I think. So, take that for what it is. Well, I'm going to introduce to you what I believe it's referring to. And we're going to come back to that in a minute. That's the basis for our lesson. So remember that. Their feet did not swell. The Lord provides. How many of us would ever doubt that God provides for us? When we're unable to provide for ourselves, God provided. When Moses was told to take the people out of Egypt and take them into the desert to wander for a great period of time, 2 to 3 million people. Do you ever think he stopped and thought about how much food he was going to take to feed them people? I shared with you guys this before, and I want to share it with you again. Obviously, it would take a lot of food to feed that many people. And the general master, the quartermaster general in the army, this is from him apparently, or from them, her, whatever, I don't know. It is reported that Moses would have had to have 1,500 tons of food each day. It would have taken 2 freight trains, each at least a mile long, to provide this many people with food every day. Besides, you must remember, they were out in the desert. They would have to have firewood to cook. This would take 4,000 tons of wood and a few more freight trains, each a mile long, just for one day. And just think, they were 40 years in transit. They would have to have water. If they only had enough to drink and wash a few dishes, it would take 11 million gallons each day. And a freight train with tank cars 1,800 miles long, just to bring water. Do you think Moses thought about this? Do you think he planned, oh, I'm going to make sure I need 11 million gallons of water each day, and I got to have this and this? I doubt Moses was prepared for that. But thankfully, God was prepared for that. Thankfully, the Lord knew what task he was undertaking, and he was there to provide Moses with it. Now, go beyond the idea of just how much food it would take to feed 2 to 3 million people, and think about the task of eating properly. I'm going to put this over here for a minute. Think about the task of just eating properly. How many of us, on a daily basis, watch what we eat? We want to avoid this, we want to eat this. In this country, we are so blessed that we have multivitamins we can take every day. We have breads and cereals that are fortified. Our orange juice has calcium. And we have orange juice that has zinc and vitamin E and all these things that, in the time of Moses, their foods weren't fortified. They didn't have extra thiamine and B vitamins and zinc tossed in everywhere and extra calcium in their orange juice. They had to not only have a lot of food, but God had to provide them food that was nutritionally adequate. Not an easy task for us to eat right every day, is it? How hard would it be for 2 to 3 million nomads traveling through a desert to get what was nutritionally adequate, nutritionally necessary every day? I hope this doesn't disturb you too much. Too late. How is it they didn't suffer from vitamin A deficiency? The top 3 pictures here are vitamin A deficiency. Vitamin A causes our cells to mature. We have cells, but they're not maturing, and they're immature cells. And the result of these immature cells, if it's not taken care of, first of all comes night blindness. Then after that can come permanent blindness. And here we have pictures of people that their eyes have become permanently blinded, at least the one on the bottom has. The top one, in case you don't notice, these cells here are abnormal cells. How is it they didn't suffer from vitamin A deficiency? How is it they didn't suffer from something we talked about 2 weeks ago? Vitamin C deficiency. These are the back of somebody's legs. And these are hemorrhages. Little tiny hemorrhages all over the back of their legs because vitamin C, if you remember, I'm sure you remember from 2 weeks ago, is necessary for collagen synthesis. If you all remember that, collagen is a protein and it's necessary for our connective tissue. So without this collagen, they bruise easy. So here you see, this is their hemorrhages, bruises all over the back of this person's leg. And if it gets really bad, bleeding gums. It's hard to pick up on this picture. It's not in color. I know you're bummed out about that. But here this is blood, bleeding gums. And up here, how is it they didn't suffer from vitamin A deficiency, vitamin C deficiency, anemia? We often think of anemia as being an iron deficiency, but there can be a lot of reasons for anemia. Folate, B12, zinc, iron, copper. I mean, the list goes on and on for why we become anemic. How is it they didn't suffer from these diseases? Do they know something special about nutrition that they said, oh, we better get some vitamin A today. We don't want to be blind. Get those carrots. I don't think they had special knowledge that told them what to eat or else they'll get this deficiency symptom. I don't think they had that special knowledge. In fact, even today, our most recent studies in vitamin C is only fairly recent. I mean, vitamin C is a fairly new discovery. 250 years ago, when sailors would go to sea, two-thirds of the ship's crew on a long voyage would not return home. Two-thirds of a ship's crew would die at sea. Not because the ship was bad, not because the waters were rough, but because they would die of a horrible disease. People would bruise and they'd get achy joints and their gums would bleed. And Dr. James Lynn started studying this and said, we got to stop this. So he found out that there was something in citrus fruit that stopped scurvy from happening. He called it the anti-scurvy factor, ascorbic acid, vitamin C. That's why the British sailors came to be known as limeys, just for your information. So Dr. James Lynn did some studies and found out that vitamin C stopped these horrible diseases. But that was 250 years ago. How is it, thousands of years ago, Moses leading people through a desert weren't getting these symptoms, weren't getting these diseases? Their feet did not swell. That's a weird statement. Now we're finally back to that, why we started here. Their feet did not swell. In rural Africa and some of the Pacific Islands, to this day, if you go to those places, you will see people with swollen feet. Swollen feet is called dependent edema. These people have swollen feet because they are having either inadequate protein, they're simply not getting enough protein in their diets, or they're not getting a quality protein. When your body's not getting good quantity or good quality protein, then your body says, we need to start conserving protein. So your body decreases the production of certain proteins. One such protein that it stops its production, or at least decreases the production of, is albumin. Albumin, one of the functions of albumin is it's in our bloodstream. This protein, albumin, helps to hold water in our bloodstream. It has to do with oncotic pressure. Okay? It helps to hold water in our bloodstream. Albumin does that. Very important. Because when albumin starts decreasing in our bloodstream, then the fluid starts flowing out of our bloodstream into the surrounding tissue, causing edema. You were already there, weren't you? So we can get edema, dependent edema, when we have either inadequate amounts of protein or poor qualities of protein. Just so you know, put this up here, proteins are made up of amino acids. Most of you may have already known that. I don't know. But proteins are made up of amino acids. And you see here on top it says essential amino acids. Those amino acids you absolutely have to have in your diet. Cannot get by without them. Now, like I said before, you have to have enough protein, but you also have to have a quality protein. A quality protein, a good quality protein, is going to have all of the essential amino acids. Animal products are very good quality protein, because animal products, in general, contain all the essential amino acids. There's only one exception to that. Vegetable proteins, on the other hand, don't contain all the essential amino acids. There's only one exception to that, that being soy protein. Okay, so not only do they have to have good amounts of protein, they have to have proteins that are complete proteins, if you will. They have to have all the necessary amino acids. Places in the world today, like I mentioned, Africa and some Pacific Islands, their staple diet, the majority of their diet is rice or corn, and these simply don't have quality protein. And they don't have other proteins to eat along with them, what they call complementary protein. They don't have other proteins to eat along with them to avoid having these problems, these dependent edema, these other symptoms of malnutrition. There are other causes, besides the ones we've mentioned, for edema. Give me some water real quick. Other causes, but we'll review this real quickly. Causes of edema, protein, either inadequate amount or poor quality. Just so you know, in case you're curious, you're supposed to get 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. That's what you're supposed to get each day. And in America, you will rarely see somebody with protein deficiency. If you do, they're generally in a not a normal setting. They're not normal people in the world, in America, are not going to have this for the most part. So you have to have adequate amounts of protein, and you have to have a quality protein, or else you're going to be getting some edema going on. But besides this, let's say you get the proper protein, you get the quality protein. If you put it in your mouth and you chew it up, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the benefits of that protein. You have to be able to digest the protein properly. And there's some, I listed some minerals here that are necessary for proper protein digestion. Zinc, magnesium, manganese. All three of these minerals are necessary for the proper digestion of amino acids, of proteins. If you're lacking in zinc, magnesium, or manganese, even if you're getting enough protein, your body's not going to utilize it. So you're still going to have those deficiency symptoms. Chloride is another mineral necessary for protein to be digested. We all know that our stomachs secrete hydrochloric acid. Chloride, obviously, hydrochloric acid is a part of that. So we have to have chloride in our diet. We also have to have a functioning gastrointestinal system. If you have all the minerals, all the proteins that you need, and you have a GI system, a stomach, small intestine that's not working properly, then you can still have a protein deficiency. I want to quickly put up here a picture. That's Don Rule. By the way, I had a boneless, skinless leg of Don for lunch today. For those of you who are here this morning, you'll get that joke. Okay, here's a GI system. And you can just see some of these parts of the digestive system you may not have even thought of. Your mouth, your teeth, your throat. You have salivary glands in your mouth. You have your stomach, your pancreas, your small intestines, your large intestines, your liver, your gallbladder. I mean, we have a lot that goes to make up our digestive system. And this is just one system that we need for digesting. To be honest, there's other systems that have a role in digesting. This is just the digestive system. I want to share with you a portion of the digestive system that is particularly amazing. The small intestine. The small intestine is an amazing part of our digestive system. You see here, this is a cell. You see a nucleus and you see all these different parts of the cell. And on top of the cell, this is a small intestine cell. On top of the cell, and this is called a villi, the cell. These are microvilli, little tiny, tiny folds in the small intestine. Here is an enlarged microvilli over here. And you can see all these different parts of it that are necessary and important for digestion. The amazing, well, there's many things amazing about the small intestine, but one of the amazing things is it is structured so that we can absorb a lot through this area. The folds allow us to have more surface area. It allows a tremendous amount of surface area. And on top of the fold, on top of the microvilli, this is called the brush border. This little tiny, hairy little brush thing up here, that little brush border secretes enzymes that help to digest proteins and carbohydrates mainly. And in fact, the small intestine is the main site for protein and carbohydrate absorption. One of the amazing features of the small intestine is its surface area. I told you that all the folds in the small intestine serve to make it have a greater surface area. I want to share with you some numbers here. The surface area of a normal individual's small intestine is 300 meters squared. 300 meters squared, that's a lot. Let's put it in some practical terms. That is about equal to a 3-foot wide sidewalk, 3 football fields in length. Let me say that again. A 3-foot wide sidewalk, I guess that's about 3 foot wide, 3 football fields in length, 900 yards long, 3 feet wide in each one of our bodies. Small intestine, all those folds allow for an amazing amount of surface area, which then allows us to be able to digest and absorb very effectively, very efficiently. I wanted to throw up here real quickly. This is a very simplified version. And I know you can't read all these things. I want to point out some things to you. Very simplified version of our digestive system. The esophagus, the stomach, and these three here, the duodenum, the jejunum, and the ileum, make up the small intestine. And you'll notice that all of these here, all of these here, all of these here. So all of this is absorbed by the small intestine. On this side, all of this is absorbed by the small intestine. The protein, the amino acids, most of the vitamins and minerals are all absorbed in the small intestine. Now, I'm not going to do a lesson on small intestine. I'm simply trying to show you one component of our digestive system and how important it is and how amazing it is. I want to share with you some quotes on the digestive system. I know you've been wanting some quotes on the digestive system. Well, here they come. This is from an advanced biochemistry book. And read along with me if you can. Not out loud, but just follow along. An examination of the various mechanisms in the gastrointestinal tract allow food to be ingested, digested, absorbed, and then its residues to be excreted reveals the complexity of the digestive system and the absorptive process. Normal digestion and absorption of nutrients depends not only on a healthy alimentary canal, but also on integration of the digestive system with the nervous, endocrine, and circulatory systems. He would continue, the many factors influencing digestion and absorption, including the dispersion and mixing of ingested food, the quantity and composition of gastrointestinal secretion, enterocyte integrity, the expanse of intestinal absorptive area, and the transit time of intestinal contents. Okay, oh, that's a lot of words, but let's get back to this. The many factors influencing digestion, now let's skip down here, must be coordinated. He listed some of those factors. Those many factors must be coordinated so that nourishment of the body can occur while homeostasis of body fluids is maintained. We're going to come back to that, remember, in a minute. So remember some of those quotes. Okay. Besides the protein digestion that must occur, once we take in the protein, we break it down, we have to then synthesize proteins as the amino acids we absorb. So we've taken in the protein, we've chewed it up, we've swallowed it, we're absorbing it. Our body still has to make another protein out of it. If we want albumin, we don't just eat albumin. We have to eat protein, then our body makes albumin. So you have to have certain minerals just to make protein. I only listed a few of these, very few of these. Zinc, magnesium, sulfur. These are all necessary for the synthesis of protein. So again, if you're lacking any of those minerals, any of the vitamins, which we did not even discuss, if your digestive system is not functioning properly, if you have inadequate protein, poor quality protein, any of these things can cause edema, can cause swollen feet. Now, don't all of you go home and start taking a multivitamin because of this lesson. Because, like I said, in this country, it's probably not the problem. Probably other problems usually. Other ones we're not even going to talk about at all. Other vitamins, thiamine, vitamin A, and iron also can cause edema, can cause swelling. Isn't it amazing how well our body works? Isn't it amazing what our body is made up of, the environment it lives in, how it handles our environment? We talked last time a little bit about when we went to outer space and the changes that occur. Our bodies were specifically made for this environment. How many of you guys believe that somebody built an engine for an automobile? First engine automobile. Who was the first person that built an engine, Larry? Anybody know that? The first person built an engine, and they just got lucky that it burned fuel. How many of us would believe that? Oh, wow, great, it burns fuel. We got lucky. I don't think that happened. I think they found the fuel and built an engine that burned it. We're told in the Genesis account that the Lord made food before He made man. He made food for the engine before the engine was ever made. Isn't it amazing that our body uses food for fuel? If we did evolve, why did we evolve to the point we needed food? Why aren't we just like plants? As far as pure survival goes, what benefit did it have for us to evolve the need to eat? Why don't we just get our energy, our nourishments, and our nutrients from soil, from the sun? Why did we evolve in such a way that we had to eat food? What benefit, again, as far as pure survival goes, did that have? Why is it we're dependent on plant life for food? It's kind of a weird thing to think about. If it's benefit, if it's purely evolution, why did we evolve in such a way? What's the point? You're saying, why are we doing all this? What's the point of the lesson? Here it is. God's provision of food for the Israelites was a tremendous feat. Alright, okay. Their feet did not swell. It was a tremendous feat. Okay. But it was. There's a fly bothering me. God's provision of food for the Israelites was a tremendous feat. Can you imagine feeding 2 to 3 million people for 40 years in a desert? Not just feeding them, but feeding food that had the necessary nutrients in them? It must have been very difficult. But luckily, I'm getting attacked by a fly. But luckily, God was there. God knew our needs. God provided for our needs. In Philippians chapter 4, if you have your Bible, we can turn over there and read that. Philippians 4. You're all getting a good laugh at my expense. I don't know why it's attacking me. I'm sweet, I guess. Philippians chapter 4. I want to read just one verse. Verse 19. It reads, "And my God will supply every need of yours according to His riches in glory in Christ Jesus." There's 2 points I want to get out of tonight's lesson. The first point is, when God provides, He provides in abundance, and He provides what we need. Not necessarily what we want, but He provides what we need. The second point I want to make out of tonight's lesson is that the human body is amazing. We have been created in such a way that our bodies burn and use a certain thing for nourishment, for growth. We did not evolve in just such a way that food met our needs. We were created in such a way that food met our needs. We're told again in the Genesis account that the plants and stuff were made on the third day. The animals on the sixth day. But on the sixth day, after the animals, we were created. I want to put up here, one more time, this quote. I want to point out a few things from it. And this is not from a Christian textbook in any sort of imagination. But notice what these scientists are saying about just one component of our digestive system. He says that an examination, so when they looked at it and studied it, the various mechanisms of the gastrointestinal tract, when we've studied it, it reveals the complexity of the digestive system. And they would continue. But it's not just the digestive system, but it's also dependent upon integration of the digestive system with the nervous, endocrine, and circulatory system. How many things do you know that happen by chance are complex and integrated? How many things that just happen by pure, just luck, blind draw, are going to be complex and integrated? And he would continue. He says there are many factors, not just one factor. He says there's many factors that influence our digestion, our absorption of nutrients. And he says they must be coordinated. Did this coordination just happen by chance? Or did somebody have to coordinate? I think that tonight, I'm trying to argue, is the same thing I argued 2 weeks ago. The body we live in, the body we inhabit, the body the Lord blessed us with, is a miracle. Nothing short of a miracle. Designed by God to be complex, integrated, and coordinated. Chance, blind chance, does not come away with these things. Science can recognize the fact that our body is very much in harmony, very much dependent upon other systems to do certain functions. Again, look at what he says. The digestive system is dependent upon the nervous, the endocrine, and the circulatory system. We just touched the hem of the garment on the digestive system tonight. But that's only one of 4 systems he lists here. Do these things just happen by chance? I don't think so. So the second point, the first point again, was when the Lord provides, He provides abundantly and provides what we need. The second point again is that God created us in such a way that our body reveals the design He put into them. It reveals the complexity of what God did. Tonight is a lesson that's a little out of the normal, but at this point we still want to offer an invitation. There may be some here this evening that have fallen away. There may be some here this evening that have not been baptized in the watery grave and put on Jesus Christ. There may be some here tonight that are struggling with sins in their life that I'm unaware of, that our neighbors are unaware of, that our friends are unaware of, but that God is aware of. And the great thing about God is not only does He provide food for us when we need it, but He provides forgiveness of our sins when we need that too. There are some here tonight that we can help, or somebody here tonight that has any needs that we can be of assistance with. Please come as we sing the song that's been selected.